The Mechanical Horse, How the Bicycle Reshaped American Life by Margaret Gouroff. The Porsche is mad. I am biking down Wisconsin Avenue in Georgetown on my way to work, slipping past stopped cars at every light. Lane splitting like this is legal in D.C., but the guy in the pewter gray sports car apparently doesn't know that. When his light turns green, he honks as he speeds past me to the next red, where he angles his car to the right to block my path. Naturally, and legally, I pass him on the left. Next light, same deal. And when I pass him the second time, his window is down. "You're driving like a maniac," he yells at me. Me, a scrawny, bespectacled lady averaging 10 miles an hour. I'm the maniac? I'd like to stop and argue, but that would cause a jam, so I just mutter, "You are," and slide by. That was the last time I saw that particular road rager. Bikes are faster than cars at rush hour, as I hope he glumly realized, but I encounter his ilk often enough. Driving an automobile in heavy traffic can be infuriating, and even though the main thing that slows cars down is all the other cars, a few drivers fixate on cyclists as the problem. "Roads are for cars," these drivers think, and sometimes holler. "The bike is like a pesky little brother who needs to stay on the sidewalk and out of the way." There are a couple of problems with that perception. For one thing, cyclists are not allowed on many downtown sidewalks. For another, bikes were on the roads first. The 125 years of technological progress have obscured this fact. It is actually the car that is the baby brother. Not only did bikes precede cars, but it was bikers who successfully agitated to pave the country's dirt roads at a time when cars were only dreamt of. And during that 19th century good roads movement, bike makers pioneered mass production techniques that later made the U.S. auto industry possible. Whenever I encounter an aggressive driver who thinks bikes are a nuisance on the road, I fantasize about pulling over together so that I can drop some knowledge on them. Not just about the rights of way and the value of deep, cleansing breaths, but also about the historical respect due the bicycle, even if not to any particular cyclist. Alas, when these conflicts arrive, the driver and I usually both in a rush, and one of us always gets away. So, I am telling you. So opens The Mechanical Horse, How the Bicycle Reshaped American Life by Margaret Gouroff. You know, it's been a long and winding road for the bicycle in America. And as the classic song tells us, it will likely never disappear. The thrill of the bike has been seen by so many generations before, it's likely to be seen by so many yet to come. Bicycles are destined to continue their reshaping of American life for a long, long time. But in the long and storied history of engineering, bicycles, as we know them today, are a reasonably new mechanical creation. The Mechanical Horse begins its story by taking us back in time to the early days of bicycling, a time when, ironically, bicycles were a means of transport only for those with money and a spirit of adventure. It would be a couple of decades after those first contraptions hit the rutted roadways of their time before men and women, rarely kids, came to see the bike as a way to explore the world and to court that special someone for whom we are romantically inclined. That meandering road the bicycle has followed offers us the opportunity to grab a moment with such American cultural icons as the impresario P.T. Barnum, activist and actress Jane Fonda, star of the big screen Joan Fontaine, and that most famous of all baby doctors, Dr. Benjamin Spock. Each and every one of them have a role to play in the bicycle story. Certainly, this is not a book for the scholarly bookshelf alone. The Mechanical Horse is a book of surprising anecdotes, painting a rich picture of the bicycle's impact on Americans' social, sporting, and economic lives through the decades. The bike's infernal interference with conventional means of transportation that we heard about in that opening is nothing new. as a pair of late-night horse-drawn wagon riders discovered to their utter fright in 1860s Connecticut. A bit more on that story a bit later. And so from the daring do of a couple of bike enthusiasts from Dayton, Ohio, who conquered flight, to helping to push women's liberation forward, from providing key support for the paving of roads and byways in towns and in the countryside. And of course, as a spur to engage in sweaty exercise while seeing a bit more of the world around us, bikes have been and likely will continue down that road of surprising cultural impact and influence. As another reviewer has written, quote, "I will never look at bicycles the same." Gouroff explains how bicycles changed almost everything. They liberated women, popularized exercise, mobilized working people, inspired auto and airplane inventors. The list goes on. Quite fascinating, end quote. Surprisingly for us today, the bicycle's glory days in the late 1800s and the early 1900s, bicycle racing ran neck and neck with ball sports, rivaling baseball, football, basketball for the eyes of the American spectators. It took an economic depression and a world war to finally knock bike racing off its pedestal of massive popularity. And you might argue that the resurgence of off-road motorcycling sports is a throwback to those more humble bicycling sporting days of yore. The unexpected importance of bicycles in warfare gets its own chapter. From the use of bikes in the late 1800s through World War II, and then on to their surprisingly successful use by the Viet Minh, then the Viet Cong, as both the preferred and best means of transporting material as they were battling first the French in the 1950s and then the Americans in the 1960s and 70s and the Vietnam Wars. It all makes for a fascinating side story of what bikes have managed to provide humankind over the years. And as we can all remember, regardless of our age, the importance of bikes as swift means of transport is a part of so many of our younger years. But first, let's go back almost 100 years. During the Depression years of the 1930s, automobiles, which had become rather popular, suddenly became a luxury and less than affordable for many working families who nonetheless wanted to be out and about in their cities, their towns, the countryside. And so it was that for a not-so-brief period of years, the humble and by then ubiquitous bike became an essential means of transport, even more so as the U.S. transitioned to wartime USA during World War II. Workers who could no longer afford or find gasoline, and many more, took to bikes to get to work and commute around the towns and cities in the 1940s. But for most of us alive today, it was that allure of the bike as a youngster's dream machine, the bike becoming a central key part of our growing up years. And as you can imagine from the brief history I've described already, this change from bikes as a popular form of adult transport to bikes' overwhelming appeal to youngsters is depicted with the joyful romp into fitful independence by kids. But it is shown in these pages as well as a carefully crafted industrial response to the post-World War II re-eruption of the automobile market. By the 1950s, bike manufacturers found their adult customer base deserting them in droves for Chevys, Buicks, Caddies. Remember those ads touting them with words like, "See the USA in your Chevrolet? And wouldn't you really rather have a Buick?" Almost by chance, bike manufacturers discovered that they had a ready, new consumer group for bikes. Kids! That pivot by the bicycle companies vastly changed the look of the bicycle, too. Quickly, they moved to emphasize bikes' appeal to kids, resulting, at its peak, in the uncomfortably narrow but vaguely alluring banana seat and the high-pitched handlebars, grotesques, as one observer wrote in the early 1970s, all designs that saw a predictable backlash by adults, who were now a bit older, but still avidly turning to biking as a pastime. Adults began to buy imported bikes from Western Europe For in West Europe in those days, most nations still preferred bikes to cars. The modern-day affection for adult-focused bike clubs, bike outings, bike riding, harkening back, yes, 100 years ago, took root again and ultimately rivaled that of the bike as a totem of childhood experience. Perhaps only the cell phone will rival bikes as cultural historians look back to our times and centuries to come as iconic examples of widespread consumer items that allow folks of all ages to explore the larger world around them with an ease and a reasonable cost that little else can match. Offering any owner of either a cell phone or a bike the chance to take a taste of the wide open spaces beyond the neighborhoods we can easily walk around. Let me give a nod to the many bicyclists in our communities today, from the organized ventures of clubs to the everyday commuters around campus and in our cities. It's clear to the most casual observer that the mechanical horse is far from finished with shaping American society. I mentioned earlier that road rage is not all that new. Travel back in time with me as I finish our review by reading just a bit more from The Mechanical Horse. As our author writes, in July 1865, a few months after the South surrendered at Appomattox, a French mechanic arrived in Brooklyn bearing the parts of a machine that he had built in Paris. The 70-pound device, which had wooden wheels and a wrought iron spine, was very similar to an old-timey two-wheeled velocipede that he had seen in France. But with one key addition, there were foot pedals attached to its front wheel. The man, a quiet, dark-haired, unibrowed young fellow, soon moved to Ansonia, Connecticut, for a factory job, and he continued tinkering with the device until it was ready for his short rides to and from his workplace. That fall, the new bike inventor conducted a road test of about 4.5 miles, pedaling his velocipede mostly uphill to the nearby village of Birmingham, and then doubling back home to Ansonia. As he told a journalist 20 years later, his delight during one bumpy downhill stretch turned to panic when he realized that his brakeless vehicle was about to rear-end a horse-drawn wagon. He yelled a warning to the two men in the wagon, then veered and tumbled into a roadside culvert filled with water, cracking his head in the process. The terrified men, meanwhile, whipped their horses into a run and took off. The fellow collected himself and rode to Ansonia's main street, where, drenched and bleeding, he stopped in a tavern. Quote, there he found the two men, the journalist wrote, relating between drinks how they had seen the dark devil with human head and body half like a snake and half like a bird, just hovering above the ground, which he seemed no way to touch, chased them down the hill. The biker approached the men and in his thick French accent exclaimed, I was the devil. It's a fascinating, fun read. The Mechanical Horse, How the Bicycle Reshaped American Life. It's available at all of our fine local libraries. And if you're listening to this before our libraries open fully to the public, ask for it to be delivered to you by curbside delivery. We'll be glad to make it available for you so you can read it too. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.